This is Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
And I'm Scott Greenberg. And today on Cool Science Radio, we're joined by Park City resident Dr. Linda Lamb-Cool, CEO of MedVet, and a leader at the forefront of specialty and emergency veterinary care. A board-certified veterinary cardiologist by training, Dr. Lamb-Cool has spent her career not only advancing clinical excellence, but also shaping the future of professionalism through leadership, innovation, and a deep commitment to the human-animal bond.
From her early days as assistant professor of cardiology at Ohio State University College of Veterinary Medicine to helping grow MedVet into a nationally recognized network, she's focused on building a culture that supports caregivers while expanding access to compassionate, high-quality care. Today, we'll explore the evolving landscape of veterinary medicine and what it takes to lead with both heart and vision. Dr. Linda Lamb-Cool, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're really excited to talk to you. We're lucky that we have you as a resident here in Park City. And I just want to start with sort of what attracted you, I mean, first to veterinary medicine, but to be a veterinary cardiologist. How fascinating is that?
I think my story of becoming a veterinarian first, that they'll be cardiologists, is similar to a lot of veterinarians, not all of them, but a lot, who kind of knew when they were very young they wanted to be a veterinarian. I still have the paper from my mom saved from kindergarten where, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I wrote a veterinarian. It's misspelled, but I can spell it today. So that's progress. And then I think that initial love of your childhood pet, which is probably where most of that desire to be a veterinarian comes for so many young men and women, boys and girls, it was sort of solidified that I wanted to be a veterinarian because of a love of science, right? I loved physiology and biology and mainly the sort of puzzle problem-solving part of the science of healthcare and medicine. And then I think the other thing that sort of solidifies it for many people is then they figure out they really like serving others, you know, and they do kind of want to help others. And that becomes a place where veterinary medicine is kind of science and purpose can come together in a pretty amazing way. Now, cardiology, when I went to vet school, I didn't know there were specialists. Now, it was a long time ago, so there weren't as many specialists. There were just general practitioners. And I worked for a general practitioner in Baltimore, Maryland, since I was 14, cleaning kennels, you know, working your way up. And I didn't know there was any other kind of veterinarian. And then I was a freshman first year in vet school, and the veterinary cardiologist walks in the lecture hall talking about cardiology. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to be that. So, yeah, then I understood. Many people understand now. Sorry about the dog barking in the background of a veterinarian. Imagine that. But I learned that there were interns and oncologists and radiation oncologists, and that if you wanted to, after veterinary school, when you become a veterinarian, if you also wanted to do another 4 years of an internship and a residency, that you could become a specialist. So that's when I decided, oh, I want to do that.
Well, first off, I want to mention, everyone in the veterinary profession pronounces it correctly. The rest of us call you veterinarians, but we know you are veterinarian. And I try to say it the right way, and I'm just hung up on that. Do any lay people say it the right way?
It's a mix. And I think most veterinarians don't care how you say it. As long as you know that we're here for you and your pet, we're good.
We've already had a conversation before we went on air. You took us through a tour of dogs of your house. And so we know that this human-animal bond is very near and dear to your heart. You have animals in your house. You had to introduce us to them. You even have grandpups. So I guess it's kind of a question that maybe doesn't need explaining, but I'd like to hear your take on the human-animal bond and how important you think it is.
It's so critical for the world right now. I think when times are hard, right? If you had asked me before COVID, could the human-animal bond get any stronger? I probably would have said no. You know, it's already so strong. And then we had all this loneliness and isolation and more depression and anxiety among the population, and pets even became more popular. You know, we saw a big increase in, we call them affectionately, the COVID puppies. A lot of people went out and adopted animals that didn't already have them. So I think the human-animal bond is, you know, it's pretty amazing. If you look at surveys of people, usually between 90 to 97% of people say that their pet is part of their family. You know, over half say it's a child, three quarters say it's my best friend. You know, those are pretty powerful statements. My middle daughter, Hannah, told me one day that pets are the new kids and plants are the new pets. But I didn't know about the plants part, but I certainly knew about the pets part. So, you know, I think it's an amazing, important creation of joy for so many people to have a dog or a cat or something more exotic, like a, you know, bird. And so I think for me, you know, I was talking earlier about wanting to be a veterinarian because you wanted to help pets. I think it was, I'll kind of never forget my very first client and patient. When you're the doctor, you know, you're an intern, you're done veterinary school, now you're the doctor. And I walked in the exam room in my lab coat, and I had this older woman with an ancient cat. And she started telling me the story of her cat and how important it was to her in her life. And as her partner had died, and then other people had died, how this cat had just become, you know, so important to her. And then she described the cat's clinical symptoms of it had a ton of weight loss and it was hungry all the time. It was urinating, drinking too much. And her veterinarian had told her they couldn't really help it, but maybe go to a specialist. And so she had come to see me, and I did a physical exam on the cat, and it had this thyroid nodule, which is a great cause for those symptoms. One we used to fix by surgery back then. Now we do it by radioactive iodine or diet. But I'll never forget the feeling I had when I told her, hey, we can fix this. Like we can fix this. And she just, you know, the change in her demeanor and her comfort in the room. And then I think the cat was probably about 17 or 18. And I'll never forget, because she came back when the cat was 20 for a recheck. And she had the whole carrier decorated with happy birthday streamers. And, you know, to me, that was when, as a young veterinarian, I realized, boy, I went into this to help pets, but I'm really here to help her. You know, I'm really here to preserve that human-animal bond. And that was a big, kind of a big moment for me. And I think a lot of veterinarians have that moment when they first start talking to their clients and the pet parents.
And I'm actually going to circle back on that a little bit later in our interview because of a personal story I have with you. You know, you said that plants are the new pets. I'm sure it's easier to maybe potty train a cactus than a dog. I'm just guessing. When you mentioned this journey that you've been on, your educational journey, I mean, can you tell me a little bit about what it's like in terms of how long does it take to go through vet school? How long does it take to do, you know, a particular residency or fellowship or specialty? I mean, I'm just curious in terms of how that works.
Sure, Scott. It's similar to human healthcare with a maybe one key difference. So you go to undergraduate, you get your college degree, or at least the prerequisites to get into veterinary school, which some people do in under 4 years, but most people, they finish their undergraduate degree and then they go to veterinary school. Veterinary school is 4 years, just like medical school. You do your veterinary school. Now, here's the first big difference between veterinary and human healthcare. After you finish your four-year veterinary degree, you can go out and be a family practitioner, general practitioner, right out of vet school. And that's what most veterinarians do. Probably maybe three quarters of veterinarians, once they graduate from veterinary school, they go out, they join a practice or they start a practice where they deliver wellness and urgent care and, you know, do spays and neuters and vaccinations and handle, you know, a lot of routine health problems. In human medicine, you don't go out and practice right out of medical school. You have to do an internship and residency. In veterinary medicine, an internship and residency is only necessary if you want to be a specialist. Because I'm a cardiologist, I finished veterinary school. I was a veterinarian. When I saw that nice client with the old cat with hyperthyroidism, but I was an intern. I was in a training program. I was a veterinarian helping people, but I had mentors all around me, you know, watching what I did and helping me develop the skill set to then in a, so a one-year internship where you do rotation through lots of different medicine and surgery things, but then you do a three-year residency. So the three-year residency might be in cardiology or oncology or surgery or dermatology. You do that three-year residency. And then at the end of that, you take a big exam called the board exam. And once you pass that exam and you complete your residency, you are board certified in a specialty, like ophthalmology, like was nipple.
Got it. Yeah, I'm married to a radiation oncologist on the human side. So I kind of understand the transition and the very long haul that it takes to get to where you are. Now, you are currently the CEO of MedVet, which is an extraordinary organization. And if you would, I'd like you to spend just a few minutes telling us a little bit about MedVet. While you do, what I'd really am interested in is your personal transition from a cardiac specialist into this role of leadership with MedVet.
Sure. Thanks, Scott. Good question. You know, MedVet is a group of currently 47 specialty and emergency hospitals. So we don't do any general practice. We serve the general practitioners and their teams by being a place where they can refer things on the emergency side because maybe they're not open or it's really a high acuity problem, like, you know, they got hit by a car or they're really, really sick. And then by having the specialties, right? Surgery, internal medicine, cardiology, dermatology. So that's really all we do. We like that we're focused on specialty and emergency care because it's a hard thing to deliver great, excellent medical care in a compassionate way. And we feel like because we only do specialty and emergency care, we can be, you know, the best we can be at it. We have a little over 3,000 team members at this point, which is kind of hard for me to believe. When I joined MedVet in January of 2000, I was the seventh doc, and now we have over 700. So that's really cool. The other thing I'm really proud of about the organization is we are owned by our team. You know, a lot of our space has sold to private equity or venture capital, and it sort of changes decision-making and where you can land. But we're owned by 350 of our doctors and directors and above. So yeah, that's MedVet. Now maybe I'll go to my journey from a medical person to a medical leader and then an organizational leader. I think I would start with, I didn't set out to become the CEO. So anybody who wants a real pre-thought plan, I'm not your girl. Instead, I think I landed in the role the way a lot of founder CEOs land, which is I had an aspiration for us to be better at the things I cared about, you know? And if you want to help a group get better, sometimes that winds up getting you in a leadership role. I wanted to be making sure we were leaving no stone unturned and patients were getting the best outcome. I wanted to make sure clients were getting the best experience as they navigated their pet's healthcare. I wanted to make sure the general practitioners that were kind enough and doing the best thing for their patients and clients by referring them to us had a great experience. You know, they were in the loop. They didn't lose understanding of what was happening with their patient and client. They were still part of the journey of that healthcare. Then probably most importantly, I wanted to make sure we had a place where people that had dedicated their life to the service of animals could have a great career. You know, these are special people and I wanted them to have a great place to work. And the profession was struggling with delivering that during those years. So I think it was really the drive to have an impact. I kind of remember, well, it's a little like that transition from understanding that the cat was important in that first patient I treated, but boy, the pet parent was also really important. I think through my career, I made a journey to understanding that, oh my gosh, it's really our team that's important. And if our team has what they need, they will deliver great care to a whole bunch of patients and clients and referral partners. So I think realizing that, one day my sister formalized it for me because she kind of said at a holiday dinner, this was about 5 or 10 years ago, she said, I'm kind of sad you're not a veterinarian anymore. You know, you did all that work in vet school and your residency, and now you don't help patients. And I was like, oh, wait a minute, honey. Yeah. Instead of helping one individual patient, you know, we're creating a place where caregivers can treat millions of patients. We treat like 500,000 patients a year. So then she felt better. She thought because I was a CEO, I wasn't about pet care anymore. I'm like, oh no, that's why I do it. So I think transitioning from sometimes doing the work to leading and supporting the people who do the work is really about wanting to have a bigger impact. And I think that's what pulled me into the role.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Park City resident, Dr. Linda Lam Cool. She's the CEO of MedVet, and she was a veterinary cardiologist back in the day before she became the CEO. Or, well, it sounds like there was a kind of a long time, you know, transition, slow transition, Linda. When was the last time you operated on, you know, an animal's heart?
That's a great question. And let me be clear, I'm more of a medical cardiologist and interventional cardiologist. So if your dog needs its chest opened, I'm not your girl. If it needs a pacemaker placed, I'm your girl. If it has heart failure or needs an ultrasound, what we call echocardiogram. So I haven't done that since 2015. But I graduated from vet school in 1989, so, and my residency in 92. So for a couple decades, and I really enjoyed it. And to your point, Lynn, I did kind of transition into medical leadership. You know, when I joined MedVet, we were just one hospital in Columbus, Ohio. And, you know, as the needs of the organization grew, then I kind of stepped out of the clinic. I would do half time at first. And then eventually, I think when I became the chief medical officer, it was time to give a full-time commitment to helping the organization.
So 47 clinics or hospitals, 700 doctors of veterinary care. Where's the nearest MedVet to Park City?
Gosh, and I might have to Google the address, but we do have a multi-specialty hospital in downtown Salt Lake. And then we also have one in kind of Ogden, Logan area. We call it MedVet Northern Utah, and the other one MedVet Salt Lake City. The one in Salt Lake City is a big multi-specialty hospital. So for us, the hospitals that we believe deliver the absolute best care, best experience for the client and our referral partners, those general practitioners who share their patients and clients with us, and our caregivers are really, you know, they're 30 to 40,000 square foot facilities. They have 50-ish specialists and ER docs. So they have all the specialties. You know, so if your patient comes in through ER and it winds up needing surgery, that might be a surgery the ER doc can do, or it might be a surgery that needs a board certified surgeon. And those are available because there's two or three that work at the hospital. And if it has a heart murmur or they're high anesthetic risk, they have a cardiologist who can evaluate the animal before. So we love the hospitals where we really have, it's kind of like going to the Mayo Clinic, right? Or the Cleveland Clinic. We have everything your pet needs in that one building.
So I understand that veterinary medicine is actually facing a burnout challenge right now, and that there are a number of doctors actually exiting the field. But you're really focused on building a culture that supports both excellence and well-being. How are you going about that? How are you supporting the people who support us and our pets?
Thank you so much for knowing that much about the profession and caring about our caregivers, Scott. It is a real challenge. You know, we have the cumulative impact of a super high demand for our services. It's emotionally intense, right? You know, you're dealing with people who, you know, this is their kid and you're taking care of them. And then we have healthcare team member shortages, both on the doc side and on, we call them veterinary technicians, similar, but nurses in human healthcare. So there's shortages that, you know, add more stress to the team. We've been working on this for a long time, though, at MedVet, and we've made great progress. It's like many things, it's very holistic, multifactorial. You know, you can't just do one thing and expect this to get better, right? It's a system problem. There's a lot of work to do, and we've done a lot of work. You know, we kind of started by framing well-being into workplace well-being, financial well-being, and personal well-being. And then we went to work on each bucket over years, you know? And we've made great progress. We did things like, and we still have work to do, but eliminating the things at work that stink. You know, like for a doctor or a technician, that's spending hours in front of a computer in an electronic medical record system that isn't that good. So we, you know, scaled the best one across all our hospitals. We worked on how to use it best. Then we added ambient listening, right? COVID is a great thing that we use in our hospitals where the team doesn't have to transcribe everything that the client said because it's in the record already and they can just edit it and saves them. We rolled that out about a year ago and it's saving our team most dots an hour and a half a day. I mean, then they can be in front of the patient and the client, which is what they want to do, you know? So getting rid of things that make the job harder so that we can work smarter and not harder, thoughtful staffing models with flexibility, focused roles so they can be successful in their job. We added social workers. That was a big stress reliever for our team. It was giant. And then on the financial side, things like student debt repayment, because debt is a big issue in veterinary healthcare. Our doc, I think the average doc, don't quote me because I might not have the current numbers, but I think it's like $170,000 if they have debt that they graduate with. You know, so we have a student debt repayment program. We make sure they have fair compensation and benefits. I know a biggie. A biggie is having local leadership that's really strong and can support them. You know, so years ago we realized, boy, it doesn't really matter what the organization, you know, leaders are doing. If there's not somebody in the hospital to support our team and help solve their problems, it's not going to have a great culture in that hospital and they're not going to like what they do. And so we've invested a lot in leadership development and we have a dyad leadership model in each hospital where there's a medical director paired with a hospital director to really support the hospital. We did things like well-being rooms in every hospital so people can get a spot to recover. You know, we do debriefing after hard emotional things happen on the clinic floor. So it's a lot of work. And then, oh, I got to brag about the chief medical officer who's retired now, what Mike Padel, he's a great neurologist. He really got passionate about well-being about, I'd say 10 years ago. And it's a big part of why MedVet is done so well in it. But he surveyed our docs every 2 years. This will be the fourth time we do that. And based on that survey, we decide what we're going to fix next, you know? And the really rewarding part is the improvement that we've seen in so many of the things that we ask about in the well-being survey. So it's not a single solution, but there's real progress. Oh, and I got to add one of my favorite, I tell this story every 2 weeks at new hire orientation. A big part of compassion fatigue that leads to burnout, the best like sort of counterbalance to it is actually if our healthcare team members can feel the gratitude from those they serve and serve with. And healthcare people are sort of perfectionists. They have like Kevlar, they don't take in the gratitude. So the client is thanking them and they go, oh, it's just my job. I'm like, no, you can't say that. You're a superhero, you know? And my team knows that my favorite definition of a hero is someone who's remembered fondly by someone else for the rest of their life. And as a healthcare provider, you do that every day. And they have to take that in so that when the hard things happen, they're resilient and they're ready to take it on. So we work hard on gratitude and celebrating the team.
And I am a living example of that. You've mentioned compassionate care several times. And Linda, you know my personal story. A year ago, we lost our beloved pet, Frankie, a member of our family. And it was on a weekend. We didn't know what to do. He passed at home and we were absolutely beside ourselves with grief. And I called MedVet and I spoke to one of your social workers who was amazing and compassionate and kind and caring. And we were able to transport Frankie down to Salt Lake. And the care that we got, the compassion that we got, it's still tough. I mean, it's always going to be tough, but it really was a remarkable experience. And I cannot thank you and your team enough for helping us. And as I think I told you personally a couple months ago, as a cardiologist, yes, you deal with the heart, but I think what you also do is you mend human hearts. And I just wanted to take the opportunity to say thank you, just tell you how appreciative we were in a very difficult time that you and your team were there for us. So not really a question, just more of a shout out.
You know, thank you so much. I'm going to share the mend human hearts concept with my team. I've never heard it said that way. brings tears to my eyes. You know, it's amazing. Our team loves, you know, when we have the pets that do great and we get to release them from the hospital after 2 weeks in the hospital, and the teams will line the hallway and, you know, they'll celebrate and the clients love it. And sometimes the pets aren't really sure. They're like, why are all those people cheering around me? But that's a great, you know, moment of how our work matters. But you highlight one that, you know, it's actually a really important part of what we deliver is end of life care and support. You know, it's probably one of the harder things we do, and we just do it so amazingly well. I mean, we get more thank you notes from clients that we had to help with end of life than ones we probably saved, because it's such a hard time and it does require a lot of support. So thank you for sharing your story. I'm sorry you didn't have more time, but I know the time that dog had was awesome.
I mean, 13 wonderful years, and I was very appreciative of everything you and MedVet did at end of life. Well, on that emotional note, Dr. Linda Lamkuhl, thank you so much for being our guest today on Cool Science Radio. It is so wonderful to have you here in our Park City community as one of our members, and all the work that you do across all of your hospitals at MedVet, speaking on behalf of pet owners everywhere. Thank you. And thank you for being here.
Thank you. Well, thanks for letting us spread the word about specialty and emergency care. So thanks.